Hello and welcome to the Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24. Each week we'll be hearing from the sharpest minds and freshest thinkers in the world of finance, taking you beyond the numbers and the hype and getting to the heart of the big issues of the day. This week we're dipping into UBS's white paper for last week's World Economic Forum annual meeting 2017. The document sets out a strategy to channel private wealth towards the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals. This ties in with the broader Davos meeting's theme of responsive and responsible leadership. We'll ask our panel, including several of the authors of the report, to summarise the background to these SDGs and learn why the time is very much now for such initiatives. And we'll dig a little deeper too. If indeed private wealth does have a key role to play, then why do many, even most, initiatives ignore it? We'll ask our experts that critical question. And they'll tell us, all this being the case, what the focus of private wealth should be to make the most difference in this space. We start with Paul Donovan, Global Chief Economist, UBS Wealth Management, who summarises some of the background and explains why the time is now for these initiatives.
Historically, attempts to generate growth in emerging markets and developing economies haven't really focused on the sustainability of that economic growth in terms of producing better quality growth in the future and managing environmental and other resources. The problem is that the world economy is now starting to very clearly face the consequences of an environmental credit crunch. We can't keep using non-renewable resources at the pace that we're doing. And we're seeing a number of countries actually run into real issues with sustainability as a constraint on living standards. One obvious example is the way in which water acts as a constraint on Chinese economic growth. So the Sustainable Development Goals are, I think, a credible attempt to try and produce growth which obviously raises standards of living, but sustainably raises standards of living, not in an environmental sense, but in an economic sense, in a way that makes sure that future generations will enjoy a better quality of life rather than potentially suffering at the expense of the generation today.
Simon Smiles, UBS Chief Investment Officer for Ultra High Net Worth, explains why, in his view, that the time is most definitely right.
There are 17 Sustainable Development Goals, which have now been committed to by almost every country on Earth through to 2030. And they address a whole range of the core inequalities which are facing society, access to water, food, etc. And I think particularly against the backdrop of rising both income inequality, wealth inequality, but also populism, it's particularly apt, you know, to focus efforts both from the corporate world, from the government world, and also from the financial world in achieving these aims.
Bloomberg News' editor-at-large Tom Keane was up in Davos last week. Here are some of his thoughts on the World Economic Forum meeting theme of responsible and responsive leadership. Tom makes the point that at times last week it was hard to consider such themes other than through the prism of the new White House administration.
What they were responding to was one Donald Trump, now President Trump. What I saw, and this is a secondary idea, but nevertheless, since I've been at Davos a week later, I feel like it's an ever more presence than I thought when I was there, and that is CEOs talking their book. I've never seen such a collective group of control freaks and leaders massaging the message as they adapt to President Trump, to an extent Brexit as well, but much more watching American CEOs, multinational CEOs adapt to how they want to handle this president if they can handle him.
Private wealth undeniably has a key role to play. So why do many, even most, initiatives ignore it? Here's Paul Donovan again.
Traditionally, of course, investment in any kind of infrastructure generates returns really only over the very long term. An infrastructure project has 25, 30-year life minimum in many cases. And often the returns on an infrastructure project are what economists call externalities. That's to say they're not financial returns as such, but they provide benefits to the community or to society at large. And for these reasons, I think there's been a tendency to overlook the role that private capital can play in supporting infrastructure. Companies tend to be looking for shorter term returns than infrastructure allows, and they obviously don't benefit so much from the social returns that can come through. What I think is important is that private wealth can provide a long-term duration of investing. They're not necessarily going to be looking for quick wins as a private wealth investor. And there are ways of structuring infrastructure and development initiatives in such a way that either there is a very clear philanthropic return, or alternatively, there is a monetized return, even if the overall profitability of the project still depends on externalities to make it worthwhile.
Why do many initiatives ignore private wealth, according to Simon Smiles?
I think it's a very good observation. I mean, there's 250 trillion of household wealth. The three largest wealth managers alone, of which UBS is one, manage 6 trillion of assets. And yet, across the whole range of very worthwhile and very well-intentioned global initiatives, there's almost no focus on private wealth. Instead, the focus is on regulation, and the focus has been on institutional capital and how to deploy that to meet the Sustainable Development Goals. It's a huge, huge opportunity. And one that is the world's leading wealth manager, UBS, we're trying to redress.
Does James Gifford agree that this is the case, and what can be done about it? James is a senior impact investing strategist at UBS.
Traditionally, people have said that issues around poverty or environmental protection are things that should be dealt with by governments or perhaps philanthropies and businesses there, you know, to maximize profits. But I think what people have ignored is that there is a really important role for private wealth in addressing these goals. And the first thing to understand is that the scale of the problem really requires business to get heavily involved. So if you look at the size of the funding gap for the Sustainable Development Goals, we're talking around about $5 to $7 trillion US dollars a year in investment needed. Now, the largest foundation in the world is the Gates Foundation. It's around $38 billion. So we're talking about per year needing more than 100 Gates Foundations. So philanthropy is not even close to meeting the needs that we need. And governments as well are not really placed to pick up that size of investment. So we need the private sector and we need business to be generating that economic growth in those markets in an environmentally and socially sustainable way if we are to address them. So people have traditionally dealt with development finance institutions such as the World Bank or the International Finance Corporation and some institutional investors, so some pension funds and sovereign wealth funds, and worked out ways that they could deploy capital into these markets for development.
Still to come on the Bulletin with UBS, we'll look at transparency or lack of it and consider whether that might be an issue. Is a lack of transparency the key problem to overcome here? We know it can be a driver behind some of the scepticism we see regarding the role of private wealth in addressing the SDGs. It's part of it, yes, but a lack of data is a key problem, and connectivity too, as Simon Smiles explains.
Transparency is one way to put it. I think, you know, a broader sense is there is so much need, but the data on exactly where the needs are by country and by, you know, individual sustainable development goal, you know, is lacking. It was one of the constraints we had when writing the white paper. So there does need to be more data to improve, as you put it, the transparency of where the greatest needs are. But perhaps even more fundamentally, there needs to be more connectivity. There's a huge pool of private wealth capital that can help fund the Sustainable Development Goals, but they're not seeing the investment opportunities brought to them. And so that lack of connectivity is a key thing we tried to address in the white paper. It's why UBS has committed to help launch a Young Global Leaders initiative called Align 17, a multi-stakeholder platform exactly trying to address this lack of connectivity and calling on other partners to join us. You know, a range of other firms like PricewaterhouseCoopers, the Gates Foundation, Rockefeller Advisors and TPG have expressed interest in helping partner with us, you know, to bring this to fruition. It's also why UBS committed to work with our clients to deploy at least $5 billion into impact investments linked to the Sustainable Development Goals within the next 5 years.
Is a lack of transparency the key problem here? Or should we look to something else, maybe that lack of data? Well, yes, on both those counts, agrees James Gifford.
There's definitely a lack of transparency and data. We don't know exactly the most effective places to deploy capital, you know, which countries most in need, and also, you know, which investable opportunities are there. Currently, we have a number of databases of funds, but they're more like a listing. We don't have detailed risk and return data about these private market investment opportunities. So absolutely, that's a problem. It's not the only problem, though. You know, we have lack of standardization of terms in contracts and regulations. There are issues around financial regulations that came out of the financial crisis that make it very difficult for impact funds to register in multiple countries. So that seems like a small issue, but it's actually very prohibitive for new funds to form and be able to market to private investors in different countries. There's a lack of secondary markets, so if investors want to get in, it's difficult to get out. And incentivization, I think that's a key one. Many of these countries are very risky, and many private investors don't understand those risks, and working to not only reduce risk for the investments, but make the investments more attractive and the returns more attractive on the upside through public-private partnerships, I think could really make a difference.
And a lack of transparency is certainly something to be aware of, according to Paul Donovan.
Of course, complexity around infrastructure, investment and achieving development goals is exacerbated by the fact that very often the returns on any investment are really only seen in the very long term. That means, of course, that investors may become nervous in the short term about whether or not their investment is bearing fruit in terms of social dividends or in terms of monetary dividends. So I think that having a very open, transparent process is something which is very helpful because it reassures investors about what is going on, about how their money is being put to work, even if you can't necessarily see the consequences of that investment immediately or in real time. So I think the transparency process is helpful. It is, of course, the case that in the past, a number of large infrastructure projects have been subject to government corruption, to misuse of funds in various countries. And that legacy is probably something which still deters international investors, and again is something where transparency can help. I think that the stamp of approval from international organisations, the development banks, the IMF and so on and so forth, can help in this regard in providing, as it were, a quality assurance as to the transparency and effectiveness of an investment programme.
Finally on the programme, a couple of other views from Davos. Looking at the press around the World Economic Forum, and it was all about the rise in populism and the Davos elite and whether they've lost touch. But, says Simon Smiles,
up here at the World Economic Forum, there are so many fantastic initiatives being launched directly to try and redress the growing inequality that we've seen. It is staggering, the difference of opinion. You know, we've obviously announced our initiatives along with a range of partners. There's been fantastic initiatives led by Accenture around awards for the circular economy, fantastic initiatives around gender equality, etc. So the reality up here is very much a focus on how to improve society, and it doesn't come out of whack, if you will, with the press headlines being generated in other parts of the world.
What do the future shifts in these sorts of priorities, given all the political upheaval of recent months, what with Trump and Brexit and so on, really look like? Well, Tom Keane certainly had an interesting view.
I'll go right back to my core theme. 2 days into the meetings, I changed my theme. I went from populism, Trump's Davos, which is sort of trite, to a real idea of uncertainty. And the answer is we absolutely don't know. Risk is something measurable. You can develop a probabilistic guess, a mathematical guess around risk. There's no math to uncertainty. And the absolute core theme of Davos, of the World Economic Forum meetings, was this idea that we just don't know where we're heading, and critically, even since Davos, on the idea of what the timeline will be. There's just such a soup of elections in Europe and all going on in Asia, just a set of uncertainties, a soup of uncertainties that really lead to what I would say, or I think anybody at Davos would say, we don't have a clue where we're going to be 12 months from now.
So what do we actually do about all of this? Paul Donovan summarizes for us the key recommendations of the UBS white paper that debuted up at Davos.
I think that one of the key conclusions from the UBS white paper on sustainable development is that the private sector should not attempt to be all things to all sustainable development goals. There are some sustainable development goals where the private sector clearly, I think, can take a lead, either because private sector efficiency is more useful, because the private sector has better experience, or because it just fits in with the profit motive and therefore perhaps gives a stronger incentive to the private sector with some additional guidance. So we have a series of sustainability objectives which are really public goods, should be dealt with in the public sphere. And then another series of objectives where I think greater private initiative and support would actually be extremely valuable. I think then the other main conclusion is looking at the ways in which the private sector can be mobilized to support the sustainable development goals. The private sector doesn't just have to invest. It can provide support through philanthropy. It can provide support through hybrid investments. It can provide support with perhaps guarantees from multinational organizations. There are a wide variety of ways in which the enormous resources of the private sector can be mobilized to maximize the social return that the Sustainable Development Goals hopefully will be able to bring about.
And that's Paul Donovan bringing us to the end of this 121st edition of The Bulletin with UBS, setting the agenda in the fast-moving world of finance every week here on Monocle 24. Listen again and find out more at monocle.com or catch up via iTunes or your preferred platform. The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24.